Imagine for a second that you are craving a completely silent, totally off-grid weekend getaway.
Oh, yeah, the dream.
Right. You are just burnt out. Your phone has been buzzing with notifications for, 6 months straight. And you just want to exist in, say, a historic 1840s mill.
Somewhere with a wood-fired stove, miles from the nearest highway.
Exactly. Surrounded by literally nothing but the sound of a creek. But today, if you want to find that, you know exactly what you have to do, and it is just exhausting.
It really is.
You pull up a generic travel platform, you scroll through endless pages of, frankly, heavily manipulated search
All
results.
the SEO algorithms.
Yeah. You battle these algorithms that push promoted, highly commercial properties straight to the top of your feed, completely regardless of what you actually typed into the search bar.
And then, at the end of it all, when you finally find a place that looks remotely like what you want, you get with a fee.
Right, a 15 to 30% hidden fee right at checkout.
It's infuriating.
But what if you never had to search again? Like, what if your personal AI assistant could simply understand that deep, unspoken craving you have for silence?
And just scan the entire globe without a single search bar.
Yes, negotiate the price, verify the energy reliability of that off-grid mill by talking directly to the mill's own hardware, and just book it for you, completely in the background.
It sounds like sci-fi, but well, we're gonna unpack this today.
Yeah, because today we are taking a deep dive into a massive foundational structural shift happening right now across the travel, tech, and infrastructure sectors. We're moving away from this platform-mediated world where giant corporations act as the middlemen for everything.
And we are entering a completely autonomous, agent-orchestrated model.
Exactly. We're going to decode how a very specific stack of cutting-edge hardware and software is turning rural entrepreneurs into what the industry is calling sovereign hosts.
And I should say, the stack of sources we are looking at today to understand this transition is incredibly dense. I mean, we are analyzing institutional-grade business plans, technical protocol registry sheets, comprehensive gap analyses, and these really detailed B2B strategic reports.
Yeah, it's a heavy reading list.
It is. Specifically, these documents detail a massive joint venture between two entities. One's called Deriticular, and they handle the physical, ruggedized hardware infrastructure.
Right.
And the other is Deoces, which stands for Digital Adventures Outdoors Are Us, and they're handling the experiential and governance layers.
It is a heavy stack of reading, but the implications are just staggering for anyone who travels, or honestly, anyone who owns property.
Oh, absolutely.
We are basically looking at a blueprint for the end of the traditional hospitality monopoly. But to set the stage for you, we have to look at the overarching problem with the travel industry today. The sources specifically refer to our current frustration as the manual search barrier.
Yeah, and what is fascinating about this manual search barrier is how deeply conditioned we have become to accept it.
We really just treat it like a law of physics.
Right. For the last 15 years, the hospitality industry has operated almost exclusively as a platform-first ecosystem. Giant aggregators, the brands you use every time you book a trip, they acted as the gatekeepers of both discovery and trust.
They built the digital roads so they get to charge the digital tolls.
Exactly. And that toll is highly extractive. If a local entrepreneur poured, say, their life savings into restoring a beautiful historic cabin, they were entirely dependent on these centralized platforms to be seen by anyone at all.
And for that privilege, the platform extracts an enormous commission fee. Like we said, usually between 15 and 30%.
But the financial cost is really only half the problem, right? The platform owns all the guest data, they control the entire relationship.
And they dictate a property's visibility based on marketing budgets or professional photography.
Yeah, and their own opaque algorithmic priorities, rather than the actual tangible quality of the property itself.
It creates a centralized choke point. If the platform decides to tweak its algorithm on a Tuesday, an independent host's bookings could just plummet to zero by Wednesday.
They're essentially sharecropping on digital land.
That's a great way to put it. But the sources highlight a transition away from this, towards something they call deep hospitality and zero UI discovery.
Zero UI, meaning zero user interface.
Right. No screens, no scrolling.
And this shift towards zero UI discovery is being driven by a massive macroeconomic trend the reports call the physical AI supercycle.
This is a really critical concept to grasp if we want to understand the next decade of technology.
It is. As artificial intelligence becomes deeply integrated into the physical world, there is a massive surging demand for edge computing.
Let's break that down for a second. Edge computing is processing power that happens locally, right there on the physical property.
Right. Rather than being beamed back and forth to some distant, centralized cloud server owned by a major tech conglomerate.
Because, I mean, if the AI is managing a physical building, you just cannot afford latency. You cannot wait for a server farm in Virginia to tell the solar panels in Montana to adjust their tilt.
Exactly the point. Yeah. And simultaneously, there's a concurrent sociological trend happening on the consumer side.
High net worth travelers, digital nomads, burned out executives, they are all increasingly seeking what the docs call low cognitive load environments.
They are actively trying to escape the very digital noise, you know, the notifications and the algorithmic manipulation that Silicon Valley created in the first place.
They want verifiable silence.
Yes. They want strict data privacy. They want deep historical and biological context.
So you have this incredible intersection, a surge in demand for local heavy-duty computing power meeting a surge in human demand for absolute off-grid tranquility.
It feels like a contradiction, right?
It really does. But it's actually the foundation of this entire new business model. But for the zero UI discovery to actually work for an AI to find this perfect quiet place for you, we have to talk about the brains behind the AI.
Because the AI we all played around with, even like a year or two ago, simply could not handle a task this complex.
No, definitely not. The sources spend a lot of time contrasting old linear chains with new stateful multi-agent graph architectures.
Yeah, so if we connect this to the broader history of AI development, early travel AI systems, you know, the chatbots that companies tried to roll out recently, they were built on linear chains.
Think of a chain as just a sequence of events.
Right. A single prompt from a user goes to a single large language model, which makes a single tool call to a database and spits out a single output. It's a straight chronological line.
And a straight line is incredibly brittle. If one link snaps, the whole thing just falls apart.
It was disastrous for complex tasks like travel. I mean, if a system on a linear chain tried to book a flight and that flight was sold out, the chain broke.
Because it lacked a persistent memory, right?
Exactly. A stateful awareness of what it was doing and the ability to pivot. So it would hallucinate.
Oh, yeah.
It would recommend hotels that have been closed for 5 years or tell you to rent a car in a city you weren't even flying into simply because it was mathematically forced to produce an answer at the end of the line.
I always picture that old linear AI as a single, highly caffeinated, incredibly overworked human assistant trying to do everything at once.
That's a great analogy.
They have the airline online one, the hotel online two, they're frantically checking the weather app and trying to secure a rental car. And the moment the airline hangs up on them, they panic, they lose track of everything else, and they just start making things up to appease you.
Exactly. But the multi-agent graph architecture, that is an entirely different paradigm.
It really is.
The multi-agent graph is much more like a well-staffed, highly specialized corporate enterprise. Mm. In this new architectural model, you do not have one monolithic AI trying to do everything.
Right. You have an orchestrator or a planner agent.
Yes. So when you tell your orchestrator, find me a silent off-grid cabin within 3 hours of Nashville for next weekend, the orchestrator does not do the searching itself.
It delegates.
It delegates parallel tasks to a fleet of highly specialized sub-agents. It fires off secure, localized requests to a flight agent, a hotel agent, and a weather agent simultaneously.
And the most crucial feature of this graph system is something called cyclic error recovery.
This is where the architecture becomes robust enough for the real world, because it's structured as a graph, meaning a web of connections. Rather than a straight line, it can loop back on itself.
Let's look at a hypothetical failure here.
Sure. So the hotel agent reports back to the orchestrator that the historic 1840s mill is completely booked on Friday night.
The orchestrator does not fail. It does not hallucinate a fake cabin.
No, it dynamically adjusts the parameters of the mission. It loops back, asks the flight agent to check Thursday flights instead to see if arriving a day early works, and then requeries the hotel agent for a Thursday to Sunday window.
And before it even bothers to ping your phone with an option, it passes everything through a quality auditor agent, right?
Yes, the quality auditor.
It's like a digital editor whose only job is to ruthlessly verify the math and ensure the final itinerary strictly meets your demand for silence.
The quality auditor is totally vital. It verifies that the properties selected actually possess the required semantic tags, ensuring the low cognitive load environment you requested is mathematically guaranteed before presenting it to you.
So if this is how we are going to find places to stay, what does this actually mean for the physical properties themselves? The sources draw a very sharp distinction here between above-the-line and below-the-line hospitality.
It's a profound economic restructuring, honestly.
This feels like a massive shift in how real estate is valued.
Standardized luxury. Think of a generic, high-end hotel suite in a major city. It has a nice flat-screen TV, a predictable, comfortable bedroom service. That is considered a commodity. It is below the line. It is easily reproducible anywhere in the world. It's highly price-sensitive. And a centralized search engine can commoditize it in a second just by sorting by price.
Because if I just need a clean room with a king bed near a convention center, I don't care about the soul of the building. I just want the cheapest one that meets a baseline standard.
Exactly. But an off-grid 1840s barn powered entirely by a local biogas digester sitting on a scenic ridge with verified acoustic silence.
That's entirely different.
That is contextually non-reproducible.
Mm.
You cannot build 1,000 of those in a factory. That is above the line.
Wow.
And in this new agentic era, the AI agents do not care about generic brand recognition or loyalty points. They care about matching the deep, specific psychological intent of the traveler with the specific verifiable parameters of the property.
Okay, but this raises a huge practical question for me. If human beings are no longer the ones doing the searching, if we aren't scrolling through glossy, wide-angle photos of living rooms bathed in golden hour light, how exactly does an AI read a cabin in the woods?
That's the million-dollar question.
Right, because a machine doesn't understand the vibe of a historic mill. It only understands code.
That brings us to the core of the digital infrastructure enabling all of this. The brains of the operation rely on two foundational software protocols, WebMCP and the A3A protocol.
Okay, let's start with WebMCP.
WebMCP stands for the Model Context Protocol. It was initially developed by Anthropic, and its primary function is to serve as the critical standardized bridge between an AI model and a real-world tool or database.
So think of WebMCP like giving the AI the literal blueprints, the inventory checklist, and the live utility meters of the cabin rather than just showing it a billboard on a highway.
That is a perfect way to conceptualize it. To be discovered by an orchestrator agent, a rural host does not need a flashy website optimized for human eyeballs.
They need to publish an agent-readable manifest via a local MCP server.
Right. This manifest exposes the property's real-time availability, its pricing, and highly specific semantic tags to external search models like Gemini or Claude. It creates what the technical documents call action tunnels.
Action tunnels. I love that term. It sounds like the AI is burrowing directly into the property's database.
Essentially, it is. These tunnels allow the traveler's agent to securely query the inventory and even perform complex actions.
Like reserving dates or adjusting climate control preferences prior to arrival.
Exactly. All without the user ever leaving their initial chat interface.
So instead of a human writing ad copy that says, "Enjoy our peaceful retreat," the property's manifest is broadcasting concrete, machine-readable JSON-LD schemas.
Yes, the semantic tags.
Things like hashtag acoustic silence 90 dB, hashtag history 1840s mill, hashtag Starlink integrated. It is literally translating the physical atmospheric experience into lines of code that an algorithm can weigh and measure.
And this creates what the research calls a semantic interlock.
A semantic interlock.
Yeah, the consumer agent understands the traveler's complex psychological requirement. I need absolute silence in a wood stove to recover from digital burnout. And it mathematically matches that intent with the host agent's granular attribute tags.
But WebMCP only connects the AI to the database so it can read the menu, so to speak. To actually execute an autonomous transaction, to book the room and pay the host, we need the second piece of the puzzle.
The A3A protocol.
That's right.
A3A stands for the Agent Web3 Agent Protocol. We have seen agent-to-agent communication before, usually called A2A, where AI models talk to other AI models to share information or pass tasks back and forth.
But A3A takes this concept into a completely different realm by introducing financial settlement.
It is.
It is the difference between two assistants comparing notes and two assistants actually signing a binding contract and transferring funds.
A3A is the trust and settlement engine of this new ecosystem. It builds on standard A2A communication, but embeds a decentralized Web3 settlement layer directly into the protocol.
So when your orchestrator agent finds that perfect historic mill and verifies the semantic interlock via WebMCP, it uses a standardized communication format.
specifically JSON RPC 2.0.
For those of us who don't spend our weekends reading protocol manuals, JSON RPC is basically just a very lightweight, highly structured language.
Yes.
It lets two separate computer programs ask each other to perform tasks over a network without misinterpreting the commands.
Yes. It is a negotiation language. Mm-hmm. The Traveler's agent uses it to negotiate directly with the MEL's local sovereign host agent. They ping back and forth.
They verify the dates.
They agree on a dynamic price based on current demand.
Yeah.
And then the A3A protocol constructs a transaction.
And here is where the old world breaks completely.
Yeah, it's wild.
Instead of punching in a 16-digit credit card number that runs through a massive corporate network, takes a merchant fee, and goes through an online travel agency that holds the money for 30 days while taking a 20% cut.
Nope, none of that.
The A3A protocol locks the digital funds in a decentralized smart contract escrow. Specifically, they use a network called the Lacutus Ledger.
No credit card networks, no bank delays, no corporate middlemen extracting rent from the transaction.
This financial disintermediation is powerful, but it raises an important conceptual question for anyone currently in the hospitality business.
What's that?
If the entire discovery and transaction process is handled machine to machine based on JSON schemas and cryptographic smart contracts, is traditional marketing dead for these independent hosts?
That is such a good question.
That is the first thing I would ask if I owned one of these properties. If the AI is making the booking decision by looking at raw code instead of a beautifully curated Instagram feed, do I fire my lifestyle photographer and hire a database engineer?
In many ways, the answer is yes.
Wow.
The institutional reports are very clear on this trajectory. Visual search engine optimization is becoming secondary, if not irrelevant, for this tier of travel.
Hosts must transition their resources to optimize for strictly structured schemas and granular attribute tagging.
There is a quote from the B2B strategy report that really crystallizes this. If the agent can understand the MIL, the human will show up.
If the agent can understand the MIL, the human will show up. That is a total inversion of conventional marketing.
You are no longer marketing to the psychological desires of the traveler. You are marketing to the mathematical parameters of the traveler's machine.
That is a wild paradigm shift.
Yeah.
Okay, so software protocols, immutable ledgers, and semantic tags are brilliant in theory.
Right.
The code works on paper. But let's bring this back down to the mud and the dirt of the physical world. Rural environments, by definition, are remote.
Very remote.
They have spotty, unreliable internet. They have fragile, aging power grids that go down the second a bad storm rolls through.
Mm-hmm.
If you are a host out in the woods, how do you actually run these complex, air-gapped AI agents and process Web3 smart contracts on-site without the entire operation going completely dark the moment a tree falls on a power line?
That vulnerability is exactly what the Duraticular joint venture was formed to solve. They are not just providing a software suite. They are building a decentralized physical infrastructure network.
Often abbreviated as a DePIN.
Yes. And the absolute heart of this physical setup, the brain sitting out in the wilderness, is a proprietary piece of hardware called the Sovereign Sentry Pro.
I spent some time looking at the visual development briefs for the Sentry Pro. It does not look like a normal computer.
Not at all.
It looks like something you would find bolted to the inside of a military submarine. It's a fanless, NEMA 4X weather-sealed anodized aluminum monoblock.
The NEMA 4X rating is crucial there. That means the enclosure is completely sealed against windblown dust, rain, sleet, snow, and even directed streams of water.
Wow.
All while remaining corrosion resistant. It has to be heavily ruggedized because it is doing immense computational lifting on the literal edge of the network, usually sitting in an unconditioned utility vault or a barn.
And inside that thick aluminum chassis, which acts as a giant heat sink to dissipate the thermal load without any moving parts, you have serious hardware.
Serious hardware. We are talking about two NVIDIA L4 GPUs and 4 terabytes of enterprise-grade NVMe solid-state storage.
The NVMe storage is important because it reads and writes data at blistering speeds,
yeah,
which you absolutely need if an AI is constantly querying a local database.
Right.
But having that much power in one box is risky. If the computer crashes, the whole property goes offline. So how do they protect it from itself?
They use a software virtualization hypervisor called Proxmox VE.
Okay, Proxmox.
Think of Proxmox as a master controller that takes the physical components of the Sentry Pro and builds digital walls inside of it, dividing one physical machine into 3 completely distinct, isolated virtual environments.
So if one environment encounters a catastrophic error, the digital walls prevent the crash from bringing down the other 2.
Exactly.
Let's walk through those 3 isolated environments because this is how a property actually becomes sovereign. First, you have the gatekeeper.
The gatekeeper acts as the digital border patrol. It runs advanced routing and firewall software. Its primary job is deep packet inspection.
Which means scrutinizing every piece of data trying to enter or leave the network.
Right, and managing automated failover. If the primary Starlink satellite connection falters, the gatekeeper instantly routes local traffic securely to back up cellular modems.
Okay, so that is the defense. The second environment running inside the Sentry is the ledger.
The ledger is the financial memory of the node. It runs the local Locutus daemon.
So this environment is responsible for logging the transactions, validating the A3A smart contracts we discussed, and securely storing encrypted data shards.
It ensures that even if the global internet connection drops entirely, the property retains an immutable record of who has paid and who has access.
And finally, the third and arguably most resource-intensive environment is the sandbox.
The sandbox is strictly reserved for the AI. It is where the local, air-gapped large language models actually run.
And by air-gapped, we mean they do not require an active internet connection to process complex requests.
Exactly. This guarantees that the AI agents governing the climate, the security, and the experience of the property are actually executing their logic on the physical property itself.
Utilizing those NVIDIA GPUs.
Right, rather than waiting for a response from an Amazon Web Services data center located 3 states away.
But the Sentry Pro, as powerful as it is just a heavy aluminum box sitting in a utility vault. To actually cover a sprawling piece of rural property, they deploy what the sources call the Nomad Mesh Canopy.
Yeah, these are specialized network nodes, the Nomad Mesh Beacons, specifically the Rios EXT-01 models.
The function of the Nomad Mesh Canopy is to project a massive private intranet across the acreage.
And these beacons broadcast two separate signals. First, they provide high-bandwidth Wi-Fi 6E.
Which allows guests to stream data or access the local AI at incredible speeds.
Yes. Second, they broadcast a 915 megahertz LoRaWAN signal.
For those unfamiliar with radio frequencies, LoRaWAN stands for Long Range Wide Area Network. It is a very low-power, low-bandwidth radio signal.
But its superpower is that it can punch straight through heavy forest canopy, thick stone walls, and rolling hills.
To read simple sensor data from miles away?
Exactly. The combination of Wi-Fi 6E for heavy data and LoRaWAN for persistent sensor telemetry completely eliminates dead zones across a 1.5-mile radius.
If we pull back and look at this physical setup, the analogy that jumps to mind is a medieval fortress but digitized.
I like that.
The Nomad Mesh Canopy is the expansive courtyard, providing a secure perimeter for communication. The Sentry Pro, sitting in its ruggedized box, is the heavily fortified keep in the center, housing the brains and the treasury.
Mm-hmm.
But historically, a fortress is ultimately useless if an invading army can just surround it and starve it out. A sovereign node needs a moat. It needs absolute, unquestionable energy independence.
And that energy moat is provided by the AgriDot Energy Microgrid.
This infrastructure is what allows the node to achieve a state the technical reports refer to as island mode.
The ability to operate indefinitely, completely severed from the fragile national power grid.
This is where the hardware goes from standard IT networking to heavy industrial engineering.
It really does. The AgriDot system provides reliable, non-intermittent baseload power through a hybrid combination of two highly complementary technologies.
Okay, what's the first one?
The first pillar is the deployment of vertical agrivoltaic arrays. These are not your standard rooftop solar panels. They are bifacial panels, meaning they absorb ambient and direct sunlight on both their front and back surfaces.
Furthermore, they are mounted vertically, resembling tall glass fences rather than flat roofs.
And there is a very specific agricultural reason for that vertical orientation. They are spaced roughly 7 meters apart.
That precise distance allows standard farming equipment, like combine tractors, to pass cleanly between them.
You are generating solar power without sacrificing the arable land?
Not only do they allow tractors to pass, but the arrays are fully automated. They slowly adjust their tilt on motorized axes every 15 minutes.
Tracking the sun to optimize solar harvesting while simultaneously managing the shade patterns cast onto the crops below, optimizing photosynthesis.
That is just brilliant design. But solar energy, no matter how efficiently harvested, is intermittent. It only works when the sun is shining.
Right.
If you have guests relying on the Sentry Pro to run the AI, you cannot afford the servers to die at 2 a.m. on a cloudy night.
Definitely not.
To guarantee that 247 reliability, to mathematically earn that hashtag off-grid biogas reliable semantic tag, they integrate the second pillar, modular anaerobic biogas digesters.
What is truly remarkable here is the closed-loop nature of the system. The digesters are essentially massive, mechanized stomachs.
They take local organic waste, agricultural runoff, cow manure from the pastures, food scraps,
and process it through thermophilic digestion. The bacteria break down the waste and release clean, combustible methane gas.
So they're literally turning farm waste into server uptime.
Yes. That extracted methane gas powers a localized combined heat and power generator.
This generator delivers constant, non-intermittent electrical baseload to the Sentry node.
While the excess thermal energy, the physical heat generated by the combustion, is piped into the historic mill to provide radiant heating for the guests.
Okay, so we have the Sentry Pro acting as the brain, the Nomad Mesh acting as the nervous system, and the AgriDot microgrid acting as the heart pumping the power.
Yeah, that's the whole organism.
But who is managing all of this heavy physical machinery? You don't have an IT network administrator and a diesel mechanic living in a tent in the woods with the guest.
Thankfully, no.
This is where the local AI running safely in that sandbox environment on the Sentry takes complete control. They use a software architecture called the OpenClaw framework.
The OpenClaw framework deploys three primary, highly specialized agents that operate exclusively on the local device. The first is the DevOps Sovereign.
This agent is powered by a quantized, highly compressed version of the Llama 3 model.
It acts as the tireless system administrator. It constantly parses server logs, monitors network traffic, and if a digital service crashes, it has the ability to self-heal and reboot those specific containers offline without human intervention.
Then you have the second agent, the field medic.
The field medic runs a specialized Mistral 7B model that has been exhaustively fine-tuned on thousands of pages of industrial manuals and mechanical schematics.
Its sole purpose is to monitor the physical hardware.
It watches the internal temperatures of the biogas digester, it tracks the voltage curves of the solar arrays, and it diagnoses mechanical friction in the panel motors before they cause a catastrophic failure.
And the third agent is the industrial foreman. This is the agent that actually turns the wrenches, digitally speaking.
It automates the physical machinery via direct CAM bus links, which are standard industrial communication lines.
Controlling things like the solar panel tilt actuators, the water pumps, and the HVAC valves inside the cabin based on the data fed to it by the other two agents.
So if we synthesize all of this, we see a seamless integration of the digital and the physical realms.
Let's walk through that synthesis from the perspective of the traveler, because this is where all of this abstract protocol stuff becomes a tangible reality.
Absolutely.
The trip was booked autonomously months ago by the A3A protocol negotiating with the host's web MCP server.
The historic 1840s mill is currently being powered entirely by the farm's waste and the sun.
Meticulously managed by an air-gapped AI that is constantly checking its own vitals. The stage is perfectly set.
It is.
So what actually happens when the human traveler, whose desire for silence initiated this entire chain reaction, physically arrives at the edge of the property?
This transition is managed by what the joint venture calls the Deosris experience layer. And the critical friction point of arrival, the check-in process, relies entirely on a technology called radio frequency fingerprinting, or RFF.
RFF acts as the digital passport for the ecosystem, and the sources repeatedly emphasize a specific phrase when discussing this: physics over QR codes.
To understand why RFF is necessary, consider the flaws in a traditional mobile check-in process today. A standard hotel will usually send a QR code or a Bluetooth-enabled key card directly to an app on your phone.
Right.
Those are purely digital credentials. Because they are just software, they can be screenshotted, cloned, forwarded to a friend, or spoofed by a malicious actor.
Furthermore, validating them almost always requires the hotel's front desk to maintain a live connection to a cloud server.
Exactly. If the cloud goes down, nobody gets into their room.
Radio frequency fingerprinting solves this by operating on the physical layer, not the software layer.
Every single mobile device antenna in the world possesses a unique, transient electromagnetic signature when it transmits the signal.
It is an unintentional microscopic hardware fingerprint created by tiny manufacturing variances during the assembly process at the factory. No two antennas broadcast exactly the same way.
The RFF sensor installed at the cabin does not care what app you have open. It reads the physical physics of the antenna itself.
Let's play out the arrival scenario, because when you string these technologies together, it sounds like absolute magic. But it is just localized engineering executing flawlessly.
Right.
The traveler drives out into the rural valley. As expected, they lose cell service entirely. The digital noise fades.
But as they approach the property line, their phone automatically handshakes with the local nomad mesh canopy that is blanketing the valley.
The traveler gets out of their car and walks up to the heavy timber door of the historic mill. Embedded in the smart lock is the RFF sensor.
It reads that unique electromagnetic signature from their phone's antenna in a fraction of a second.
Because that specific physical signature was mathematically bound to the A3A booking contract months ago during the negotiation phase.
The local sentry node verifies it instantly. It does not need to query a remote server to ask for permission.
The heavy timber door unlocks autonomously.
And this physical action, the literal turning of the deadbolt, is the final trigger for the financial settlement.
The moment the door unlocks via RFF, the Locutus ledger running in the sentry logs the event.
That specific log satisfies the final condition of the A3A smart contract, and the funds that have been sitting in escrow are automatically released directly to the host's Web3 wallet.
It is a profound modernization of commerce. There is no front desk to wait at, no physical credit card swipe, no online travel agency holding the host's funds for 30 days to juice their own quarterly interest yields.
It is seamless, trustless, peer-to-peer commerce, irrevocably triggered by verifiable physical presence.
And the experience doesn't stop once the door opens. Once inside, because the user is connected to the high-bandwidth Nomad mesh, they have full access to the DACE roster's experience layer.
Even though the property is completely severed from the chaotic global internet, the local Sentry server has the capacity to push incredible localized content.
It can stream augmented reality trail maps and gamified historical excursions directly to the guest's phone or AR glasses.
You could be hiking up the ridge behind the mill.
Oh.
Look through your lens, and the local server will render a golden holographic wireframe showing exactly how the 1840s timber flume used to operate.
Overlaid perfectly on the physical ruins in front of you.
Exactly.
It creates this incredibly rich, high-context historical experience while rigorously maintaining that verifiable silence and absolute data privacy.
Your location data, the paths you hike, the time you go to sleep, none of it is being harvested and packaged by a centralized tech monopoly to serve you ads later.
It stays encrypted on the local ledger and is scrubbed when you leave.
The system prioritizes the sovereignty of the guest just as much as the sovereignty of the host.
Okay, I have to play devil's advocate here because as a system, this relies on a massive stack of interdependent technology.
Sure.
What happens when the worst case scenario hits? I know the AgriDot microgrid keeps the power flowing, but what if the Sentry node loses its Starlinked connection to the global cloud for days?
Wow.
Does the system completely freeze? Does the guest get locked out in the rain because the node can't talk to the A3A network? Does the host not get paid for this day?
The strategic reports address this exact anxiety directly with a protocol they call the Offline Resiliency Flowchart. Remember, the core engineering philosophy behind everything we've discussed is spherical resilience, which means ruthlessly eliminating any single points of failure.
So if the external Starlink backhaul drops, the Sentry node instantly shifts entirely into offline intranet mode.
The Nomad mesh canopy remains active across the property. The RFF door lock still functions perfectly because the verification math is handled by the local Sentry, not a remote database.
So the guest is safe, but what about the money? If the node can't reach the broader Web3 network, how does the smart contract execute?
The financial transaction utilizes what are known as Locutus state channels. Think of a state channel as a secure temporary ledger that operates off the main network.
The local Sentry node can cryptographically verify the unlock event and queue the transaction securely in its local memory.
The moment the Starlink connection returns, whether that is an hour later or a week later, the system simply batch syncs that local state with the global chain, officially settling the balances.
The guest experiences zero interruption to their stay, and the host is mathematically guaranteed payment. I am genuinely marveling at the incredible efficiency and the paranoid security of this system, but we have to address the elephant in the room here.
Yeah.
Listening to this discussion, the hyper-converged edge servers, the vertical agrivoltaic arrays, the biometric physics scanners acting as locks. This sounds like a sci-fi billionaire's doomsday bunker.
It does.
How does a regular rural landowner, a farmer, or a small town entrepreneur with a nice piece of land actually pull this off?
That gap between the technological potential And the reality of rural economics is the exact focus of the gap analysis document provided in our sources.
Because the transition to the sovereign host model is not something a farmer pieces together from YouTube tutorials.
No, it requires a highly structured playbook. The joint venture provides an actionable four-step implementation checklist for rural entrepreneurs looking to break free from the platform models.
Let's examine that playbook. The journey begins with step one, asset discovery.
Asset discovery is a fundamental shift in how landowners view their property. It involves utilizing advanced GIS geographic information systems tools to map the terrain and identify hidden experiential value.
You aren't just looking for a flat piece of dirt to put a cabin on.
Right. You are identifying historical assets like the remnants of an abandoned mill or mapping the specific acoustic dampening of a secluded ridge.
While simultaneously verifying the agricultural viability of the soil beneath it.
Once the asset is mapped and verified, they move to step two, which is node setup.
Node setup is the heavy physical deployment phase. This is the trenching and the wiring.
It involves installing the Sovereign Sentry Pro in a secure, climate-stable utility vault, mounting and aligning the Starlink dish, erecting the Nomad mesh beacons across the acreage to establish the canopy, and laying down the AgriDot microgrid.
Erecting the vertical solar arrays and plumbing the biogas digester to the cabin.
After the hardware is breathing, step three is establishing the agentic bridge.
This is the critical software integration. This is where the host publishes the web MCP manifest we discussed earlier.
They connect the property's availability calendar, its pricing logic, and its live sensor telemetry to an open source MCP host.
This is the moment the property goes live, allowing the global network of AI orchestrator agents to see the property's machine-readable JSON tags and initiate action tunnels.
And finally, step four is logic design. This feels like the most creative part of the process.
Logic design is where the host programs the experience logic.
This is where they define the automated, localized interactions that make the stay uniquely above the line.
For example, a host might program the industrial foreman agent to automatically sync the cabin's climate control with the real-time energy output of the solar arrays.
Or they might set up automated local food deliveries, where guests order fresh produce from neighboring farms over the local mesh network, with the transaction settled instantly via the Locutus ledger.
It sounds incredibly elegant. It is a turnkey business model for the future. But the gap analysis points out the massive glaring weakness here. It's the capital gap.
Yeah, the money.
The unit economics provided in the business plan show a staggering $50,000 CapEx capital expenditure just to set up one of these nodes.
The $50,000 figure is a formidable barrier. Let's break down where that money goes.
Let's hear it.
The Sentry Pro HCI node itself is roughly $8,500. Five Nomad mesh beacons to cover the 1.5 miles will run $4,500. The RFF access controllers and the Desofrio software licensing is about $5,000.
But the lion's share of the cost is the AgriDot microgrid, which requires $32,000 to deploy the industrial biogas and solar infrastructure.
For an independent rural landowner, $50,000 in upfront cash is a massive hurdle.
Especially since traditional agricultural banks do not have risk underwriting models for off-grid edge computing AI hardware.
Good luck with that.
Right. Try walking into a small town credit union and asking for a loan to build a localized Web3 settlement engine. They will laugh you out of the building. So how is the Duraticular joint venture solving this capital gap? Because if they cannot solve the financing, this beautiful autonomous network never gets past the prototype phase in a lab.
They are attacking the capital gap aggressively with two distinct parallel financing solutions. The first is a model called Node as a Service, or NaaS.
Utilizing revenue-based financing.
Right. Duraticular essentially acts as an internal capital pool for the network.
Yeah.
They will cover the entire upfront hardware and installation costs to deploy the node on the host's land.
In exchange, instead of charging compounding interest like a traditional bank, they take a 35% revenue share of the node's total output until 1.5 times the initial capex is repaid.
It removes the upfront risk entirely for the landowner.
So the farmer pays nothing out of pocket and just shares the upside until the gear is paid off. That is a solid model.
But the second solution is even more fascinating because it leverages the AI technology itself to find the money. Automated grant capture. This is a brilliant, highly pragmatic use of localized software. Built directly into the Sentry Node's operating system are intelligent modules designed to auto-generate and submit massive amounts of compliance documentation for federal and state grants.
Specifically, they target the USDA REAP grants, the Rural Energy for America program.
By automatically formatting the node's local energy generation metrics and agricultural output into perfectly structured grant applications, the system can natively secure government subsidies.
That often cover up to 50% of the hardware stack completely autonomously.
That drastically changes the math for the landowner.
And when you look at the unit economics and the revenue stacking in these pro forma documents, it is genuinely mind-blowing. A farmer adopting this model isn't just renting a room on the weekends anymore.
No, they're operating an autonomous micro-utility company.
The financial projections show a massive 58.3% internal rate of return, or IRR.
For context, traditional real estate investors are thrilled to get an 8 to 12% return. An IRR of nearly 60% is software-level margin applied to physical dirt.
And they achieve that because they are generating income across four distinct verticals simultaneously.
The revenue stacking is the key to that margin. Let's look at those four verticals. First, you have the core product, the A3A lodging bookings.
At an average of $250 a night and a conservative 65% occupancy rate, with zero extractive platform fees going to a middleman.
That is nearly $60,000 a year in pure retained revenue.
And because they aren't paying 30% to a booking platform, that margin falls straight to the bottom line. But that's just the cabin. The second vertical is localized compute rental.
Remember those two highly powerful NVIDIA L4 GPUs sitting inside the Sentry Pro?
Hard to forget.
When they are not actively managing the property's climate or rendering AR maps for the guest, the node does not let them sit idle.
It dynamically leases that GPU processing power to regional AI developers and researchers who need local inference tasks completed.
It is essentially participating in a decentralized cloud computing market.
That perfectly loops back to the massive demand for edge computing we talked about at the very beginning of the deep dive. They are literally selling their excess brain power to the highest bidder while the guest is asleep.
It's so efficient.
What are the other two verticals?
Third is mesh intranet access. By projecting that 1.5-mile Wi-Fi 6E canopy, the Sovereign node can sell high-speed, localized network access subscriptions to neighboring properties or transient agricultural workers in the valley who lack cellular service.
And the fourth vertical is energy arbitrage, which optimizes what energy markets call the spark spread.
Right.
Explain the spark spread in this context.
The node is constantly generating energy from the agrivoltaics and the continuous breakdown of the biogas.
Yeah.
Often it generates more power than the Sentry and the cabin actually need.
The node can intelligently arbitrage that surplus.
I can export the excess electricity to adjacent properties on a microgrid, or, if the local grid allows, sell it back to the county.
Alternatively, it can compress and convert the excess methane gas into synthetic diesel to sell to local farmers for their heavy machinery.
Four separate, highly optimized income streams, all humming along, managed by an air-gapped AI that never sleeps.
But there is one final critical gap mentioned in the analysis, the regulatory gap. Because you know who is not going to like independent, self-financing, off-grid micro-utilities popping up across the countryside?
Centralized utility monopolies and powerful corporate hotel lobbies.
The threat of regulatory capture and pushback from legacy monopolies is very real. We have seen it time and again.
They often weaponize restrictive municipal zoning laws or enforce punitive grid interconnection penalties to legally block off-grid community cooperatives.
The joint venture's strategy to bypass this legal warfare is highly calculated. It hinges entirely on maintaining agricultural easements.
And this is exactly why the solar panels had to be vertical, because they are using agrivoltaics, meaning they are actively farming the dirt under and around the solar panel.
Yeah, they maintain their legacy agricultural status.
Precisely. The deployment protocol dictates that all sovereign nodes must maintain a land equivalent ratio, or LER, strictly above 1.2.
By ensuring the acreage remains primarily dedicated to active, verifiable farming or animal husbandry beneath the vertical solar arrays, the site retains standard protected agricultural zoning.
This renders commercial hospitality zoning bans or new micro-utility restrictions completely inapplicable.
Legally speaking, they are not a hotel. They are a farm that happens to have a very smart barn.
It is four-dimensional regulatory chess. They are using the physical layout of the crops to legally shield the AI routing hardware from municipal lawsuits.
If we pull back and look at the master financial ledger in the sources, the scaling model for this nodal destination network is incredibly aggressive.
They project scaling from a single proof-of-concept pilot node to a network of 500 planetary nodes over a 10-year cycle.
By year 10, the network is projected to generate over $38 million in gross revenue, with EBITDA margins hovering around 86%.
And because of the DATRIS governance structure, Utilizing the local staking mechanics on the Lacutus ledger, the wealth doesn't just evaporate.
95% of those transaction settlements are distributed directly back to the local token holders, the hosts, the mechanics, the local farmers who provide the organic waste.
It actively prevents capital flight. The wealth generated by the beauty and resources of the rural valley stays securely within the rural valley.
Rather than being siphoned off to inflate the quarterly earnings of a tech headquarters thousands of miles away.
That is the ultimate philosophical goal of the sovereign destination. It translates complex physical processes, energy generation, hardware state tracking, wireless networking, into robust, self-healing digital assets that grant the landowner total economic independence.
So let's bring all of these threads together and summarize this massive paradigm shift. The sources refer to this era as the death of the line, moving away from fragile, linear chains of centralized dependency and moving towards spherical resilience.
By combining the A3A settlement protocols, the Web MCP agentic discovery tunnels, the heavily ruggedized Sovereign Sentry hardware, and the unspoofable physical security of radio frequency fingerprinting,
rural entrepreneurs can completely bypass extractive tech monopolies. They reclaim 100% of their margins, they retain absolute sovereign control over their guest data, and they transform their remote land into high-yield, self-sustaining micro-utilities.
And for you listening, this signals a fundamental psychological shift in what we culturally value. In a hyper-connected, algorithmically saturated world where our attention is constantly mined, privacy and silence are rapidly becoming the ultimate luxury commodities.
It urges us to look at the physical assets around us differently.
A historic property, an abandoned mill, a quiet ridge in the woods, these are no longer just passive pieces of real estate waiting to be taxed or commoditized by a platform's algorithm.
They have the latent potential to become sovereign nodes, anchors of absolute resilience that provide energy, compute power, and restorative human experiences.
It is a breathtakingly new way to interact with the physical world.
But as we wrap up, it leaves me with one final, slightly provocative thought for you to mull over. We are rapidly building an ecosystem where our AI assistants negotiate for us, spend our money securely via smart contracts, verify the structural integrity of a building, and authenticate our physical whereabouts through the invisible electromagnetic signature of our phones.
All entirely in the background, without us lifting a single finger.
The friction of logistics is completely gone. But when the friction of the world is completely removed by hyper-efficient agents, do we lose the serendipity of the journey itself? If everything is perfectly optimized and mathematically matched to our psychological intent before we even arrive, do we ever stumble across something unexpectedly wonderful? Something we didn't even know we wanted simply because we took a wrong turn? It is something to think about the next time you find yourself craving the quiet of an 1840s mill and wondering just how much of the magic is actually in the finding.